druids.
Yeah, you don't have to cuss, but
I think fudge is funnier. That's just why I say it.
Absolutely. Fudge is funnier. I think the world could use more fudge.
And and tastier.
Yeah.
Fudge is tastier than, yeah, the other thing. You guys feeling all right?
Yeah.
You want to jump in?
I feel great.
So welcome to the Criterion community, by the way, guys. I guess you're part of it now, whether you intended to or not. Have you been part of the community or just decided Criterion's or something we want to check out? Or
I think at some point I've listened to a podcast or two over the years from Criterion Cast. I haven't actually listened to a lot of them, but this is our first venture into podcasting, doing Casually Criterion. Now, I've wanted to start a podcast. I've been listening to other podcasts for years now, and I've always wanted to do one. And this is our first go.
The Casually Criterion kind of gives us an opportunity to do two things. We both wanted to do a podcast, and then it gives us an excuse to go through the entire lineup of Criterion movies. So it's a win-win for us.
Yeah. So this is a good time. I'll just introduce you guys. We have Chris and Justin from Casually Criterion, a relatively new podcast. I think, what is it, about 2 months old now?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're about to put out our 8th episode, and we've been doing an episode a week. So, 2 months.
Yeah, I was just listening to the beginning of your Night to Remember episode. I think that just came out towards the end of this week, the good old Titanic episode. But you guys seem to be hitting your stride. You're doing well, and you're doing the Criterion Collection in spine order, sort of, kind of. Well, I guess not sort of, kind of, but you are.
Yeah, but I definitely kind of.
Some format changes. So do you want to just talk about your show real quick and what it's all about?
Yeah, sure. So we started out doing a film a week from the collection. We started at Spine Number 1, and we're going chronologically in order. But we recently decided to change up the format a little bit. We were kind of... I don't want to say struggling to watch an episode and research or watch a film and research a film for each episode, but we were feeling that we were kind of rushing some of our research and some of our analysis of the films, doing a film every single week and trying to dive deep into it. So what we're changing it to is we're going to do one of the Criterion films every other week. And in between, we're going to have episodes where we just talk about what's going on our minds in movies. And it's kind of really free, unlike the Criterion episodes where we're forced, to do the spine numbers in order. So like this week we're going to do a review of Star Wars, The Last Jedi, and we're going to talk about like the 20th Century Fox Disney deal, that sort of stuff. And we may just open it up to kind of whatever, like if we want to do an episode where we talk about French New Wave as a whole or a particular director like Paul Thomas Anderson, Edgar Wright, or even someone from Criterion Collection like Fellini, we can kind of do whatever we want.
Yeah, it's a good idea. But you kind of have two shows right now. You kind of have your little news section, and which is kind of like our piece of flair at the end, but you begin with it, and you generally talk about stuff that's really not Criterion at all, I've noticed. It's really good, though. So it's almost like you have two shows anyway, so you're kind of just spacing them out. And yes, you're about to get into some really dense films, so you need a little space for those.
Yeah, and sometimes we talked about, like right now we're actually doing the two John Woo films, right? The Killer and Hardboiled, which are right next to each other. And it's kind of a perfect opportunity, rather than have 2 weeks in a row or two episodes in a row where we're talking about John Woo and very similar films, this allows us to like watch both and do kind of one episode on The Killer and / Hardboiled. And that'll come into play as well for things like the Samurai trilogy, right? Or like
Zatoichi.
Zatoichi.
Yeah.
We did an episode on Zatoichi. That was a lot of fun, but we spent like a year prepping here and there. So, but yeah, sure. It does give you a good way to tackle box sets. Like, if you, and it's going to be a ways, but Tati, or actually the Cassavetes set is probably, forget which spine that is, but that's five films. You could probably tackle those in a 2 week period, maybe give yourself a little bit of time, 3 weeks or something. So
maybe we do three and then three one episode and two the next episode, and it's not quite as bad as five episodes in a row of Cassavetes.
What are you guys going to do when you get to the first out of print title? Because I think
I think the John Woo ones are
that's right. Okay, I guess it's not like these are not able to find anywhere. But I guess you're not going to go like spend boatloads of money on a print Criterion, are you? Just to do an episode?
No. Actually, well, some of the out of print ones I own, which is kind of nice. Oh, cool. Like I own Knights of Cabiria and Pierre Lefeu. But for these, we actually just found them on YouTube.
Okay.
Like the full films.
That works.
It took some searching, but we found them.
And I guess you have Silence of the Lambs is coming up. So are you guys going to wait for the new one? Or I don't know how the timing would work on that.
I think our episode for Silence of the Lambs will come out just before the Blu-ray comes out, which is kind of sad, but I think I have both the Criterion DVD and like the Blu-ray version, like the regular Blu-ray version that's out. So we'll probably just watch those and stick to the spine order and not break it up.
Okay. And you guys do realize that this is going to take you like 1,000, like you're basically making retirement plans right now.
Yeah. We did the math on this when we started off. And doing an episode a week is about 17 years. Mm-hmm. And now that we've split it up, I think we just made it 34 years. Well,
yeah. You can economize. Like we mentioned, the Cassavetes and Tati, when you get – and Zatoichi, you can – well, actually, Zatoichi is all one spine. So, yeah, here there are going to be some roadblocks. The Olympics, that's all one spine. So when you get to 900, you'll have to binge watch 54 movies. So, all right. Well, I don't know if you're into dorking out on the Criterion stuff, but that's pretty much what we do here. So are you game?
Absolutely.
Bring it on.
All right. We'll bring it. Well, we have an interesting week. And before we get too far in, I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping, if you guys don't mind. Last episode, we talked about Blue Christmas, where we're going to get the community get together and just watch Blu-rays over Christmas and kind of have a little thread where people talk about what they're watching. Feel free to discuss or geek out like we normally do. So that's going to – somebody asked what days that's going to be. And that's going to be basically whenever you're off work or whenever you're on the holidays. We can extend it into New Year. Of course, obviously, people have family and travel. And we're not saying just watch Blu-rays. But anyway, do you guys have Christmas plans or are you guys going to podcast?
I think with the way that it's working out, we're going to record two episodes at once and take the Christmas weekend off. So,
oh, that's smart.
Of podcasting. Yeah. And I'm taking about a week off work. I'm going up to my hometown, which is up near Dallas, and to visit. So I'll kind of have some free time there.
Cool. Yeah. I'm off the 25th and 26th, of course. So I guess that'll be 4 days and we're just chilling here. We've done our traveling for the year. And speaking of for the year, we're also getting to our end of the year shows. So people that are familiar with the Criterion Cast tradition, we'll be doing our best of 2017, actually going to record it this week, and it'll probably come out maybe in the next couple weeks. And we're also going to do the New Year's Clue, maybe a couple others. And I think this will be the second to last show of Criterion Now that we're going to do. I'm going to try to squeeze in one over Christmas, so we'll see. All right, well, that's our show. So you ready for talking about some 2018 releases, March?
Ready for it.
All right. And by the way, if you guys haven't seen these, actually, if you have seen these, I'll be super surprised. In fact, I'm going to give you like a $50 gift certificate if you see anything here.
You won't have to give us that.
That's why I offered. So we have the March releases, and I don't know if you guys, have gotten into the routine of refreshing your browser on the 15th of every month, or if this is an event to you, is it?
I mean, I always get excited when I see it, but I didn't even know what date specifically they release. It always pops up because I follow them on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. So at some point I see like new releases and then I get excited.
Yeah. We geek out. Chris, were you going to say something?
Oh yeah. I'm on the same side of Justin. Like I notice it every month when it comes up, but I don't refresh my browser.
That's what I like about you. I mean, you guys have a good rapport and you're doing a good show, but you're kind of like, well, like you said, you're casual Criterion. So you're not just casual speaking and casual demeanor, but also casual fans. So this might change in 34 years when you get through this. So anyway, they came out on Friday, and sometimes for this show, it's a little difficult because if it's a 15th on a Friday, that means they kind of, they might delay them and I might have no show to do on a weekend. But, this time they came out pretty much like clockwork. And actually this one was teased early in the day on their Twitter. So that we have on March 13th, The Age of Innocence from Martin Scorsese. And so you guys are kind of a pair, but I'll go in alphabetical order. So Chris, you get to go first. Any thoughts on this Scorsese? Have you seen it?
Yes, I have actually, the Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm for anything, with Martin Scorsese, on Criterion, the special features and everything is what I really want to dive into. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, so your thumbs up, pro Scorsese. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah, there is a new interview with Scorsese, so I don't know if you guys know this, but he's very, present on the Palin Pressburger films, so you'll get to dig into that a little bit. Justin, have you seen Age of Innocence?
I haven't. It's actually one of like the few Scorsese films that I haven't seen. I don't know why, but it's just never really, I guess it popped up where I've ended up watching it for some reason.
You know, me too.
It looks good.
It's one of those, I think I'm a little older than you, so I remember when this came out, but I skipped that. This is like the big blind spot, but through the years, everybody's told me it's amazing, and I just haven't gotten to it. So Chris, is it amazing or?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. Daniel Day-Lewis is always good.
He is pretty good, and actually, the timing of this is probably just on the heels of Phantom Thread, which is supposedly his last role. I mean, I guess we'll see. Although I don't know, I take his word. He does seem to be pretty methodical in all senses. So anyway, that's a pretty big release. And then we have March 20th. We have a couple. So this one, I'm going to give you a $50 gift certificate. Have you seen this? So Baal, B-A-A-L, from Volker Schlondorf, a new German cinema director. That's based on a Bertolt Brecht play. So. The joke. It's going to be very Brechtian. If you've seen Squid and the Whale, that's kind of like the Kafka-esque joke. And it has Rainer Werner Fassbinder in the lead role. So it's this is very interesting, but it pretty much out of nowhere. All right, just going to tease it up there. Who's seen Ball?
It's one of my blind spots.
Oh, guys.
Yeah, I know.
Have you guys seen much New German Cinema or Schlondorf or Fassbinder yet?
I'm not totally sure. I know I haven't seen any of the Fassbinder stuff. I've heard of his stuff and kind of been recommended them by some friends and stuff, but I actually haven't got to him yet. So
Fassbinder, wasn't that Assassin's Creed? Oh, that was Michael.
Yeah. Fassbinder, actually. I think you have a ways till you get to Fassbinder spines, but he's super prolific. Actually, I did an episode with on another podcast all about him. Really, he's crazy. He was like drug-fueled cocaine addict, very sexually provocative, fascinating figure. But he basically like made like 50 films in 15 years and then died.
Yeah, that's what I read. It was like he just put out an insane amount of work, which is interesting to see as many of them as you can and see how good they all are and if there's any like sacrifice for putting out that much.
And they are good. And he acted too, and acted in a lot of his own films and some other, I think his last film was just an actor. I forget the name, Querelle, I believe that, or what was that? I forget. Somebody's going to correct me, but in this one, he's performing. So Chris, do you know Fassbinder or Schlondorf?
No, that's a blind spot for me. I'm excited to learn more about it though.
Cool. We're going to have a lot of blind spots. So,
yeah.
Volker Schlondorf is a, another staple of the new German cinema. And he went to America later and he did, Death of a Salesman with Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, I have seen that.
Okay. Yeah. Which is very good. Of course, Dustin Hoffman is in the news lately for the wrong reasons, but that is a very good. And yeah, I'm not going to get into the art and artist argument, but, it was a good performance. Mm-hmm. So then we have, this one might come on your list. What is the spine? 62. So we have a reissue of The Passion of Joan of Arc. It's Carl T.H. Dreyer. How do you get a middle name, T.H.?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's Theodore, but So this is a silent film from 1928. Dreyer is very, how do I put it? He's very deliberate. His films are very providential, I guess you could say, very spiritual sometimes. And this is one of his masterpieces, one of his probably the one he's best known for. And this is a big, big upgrade. Have you guys seen it? I'll just play jump ball here.
Yeah, offer me the $50 gift card now.
I didn't offer it this time.
Yeah. I have seen this one. I watched it on my own after I watched Vivre sa vie, the Godard film.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Anna Karenina's in the theater watching this. And that piqued my interest. So I sought it out one summer and watched it. And I thought that I had a messed up version at first because I was watching it with like the version that has no sound on it.
That's how it's supposed to be seen.
Which I realized and then I watched it and it's really great. But I thought it's funny that this was announced Friday because Thursday night I was hanging out with some friends before we saw the new Star Wars and we went to Half Price Books and I saw a DVD copy of this. And was like, oh, I'm buying that. That's one I don't own. And so I bought it Thursday night, the DVD.
Thank you, Justin. Yeah, we have an inside joke that when somebody buys a DVD of something, that means it's going to be upgraded. So you made this happen. Yeah. Speaking of silent, this has three scores. So the DVD release has The Voices of Light, which was, I forget when it was recorded, I think around the time of the DVD when that first came out, and it's really good. It's choral. It's like it's here in church, but very beautiful.
Yeah, I watched that one in film school in like a history of cinema class because I think our professor didn't want to subject people to a completely silent film while we're all sitting in a classroom.
It's a pretty cold film. I maybe one day I will try it with no sound, but I think the sound helps, especially with, I think the, it helps color her performance too, which is just fantastic. It's probably a different vibe with silent. And the other one is a soloist, it's vocal group Anonymous Four. I guess it's a choir. This is not – what's that a cappella group that is really popular now? It's not those guys.
I don't know. I'm not that familiar with a cappella music.
Boys to Men?
No, there's another – somebody's going to – there's another one that's done a lot of covers. I hate them, but apparently they have a big following. And then the other score is probably going to be like sort of a trip-hop score with Goldfrapp's Will Gregory and Portishead's Adrian Utley. And there's also some piano by Mi Yanashita. So that, I think, could be super cool. A little modern, unique. In fact, I think when I rewatch it, I'm going to watch it with that score just to see what that's all about. And there are there's a commentary. It's probably the same one. Some new interviews, new essays. It's a pretty stacked release. Do you guys get into cover art? Do you care about that?
I mean, that's what got me into Criterion Collection. To start with, was going to a used video store and Barnes and Noble and seeing like this collection of films that had these like really cool artworks. And most of my criterions when I started out were blind buys based purely on cover art.
Well, we haven't talked about the cover art for the first two, but this month is pretty good. And by the way, since you guys are new to the community, there are some cover art haters. So, Cries and Whispers, when that came out, it was like Criterion committed a crime. People were so angry. So, these are nice. I like this one is different because it's just a still of Falconetti. And then there's the Criterion spine and then a black box on the bottom there that has the title, which is kind of old school, but I'm kind of digging it actually. What do you guys think?
I think it's appropriate. I mean, if there was some crazy illustration, it might just not really mesh with the movie, but like the movie is so sort of real and like there's so much mm-hmm. close-ups on Falconetti that it's a good representation.
I like the simpler is better, I think, sometimes, and I think this is a good one.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the ball cover art or bow. I don't know how you say that. It's I think that's an old Greek god or some Egyptian god, one of them. But yeah, that one is very like impressionistic painting of Fassbender. So yeah, that would not work for Falconetti for this film. Simple is best. Let's move on to the next one. We have actually kind of I have a slight connection with this one. So Ken Russell's Women in Love, 1960. Oh, I don't have it. I think it's 66 or 67. It's based on a D.H. Lawrence novel. It is 69, actually. I was way off, but that's actually bad joke, but that's actually fitting. So Ken Russell, so my connection is I'm friends with his widow, Lisa Tribble, Russell. But this is I don't know if you guys know D.H. Lawrence or Ken Russell's work, but this is probably the appropriate title would be Men in Love. It's, Oliver Reed and, Alan Bates. So, Chris, are you familiar with any of them, or have you seen this?
I have not seen Women in Love. Is T.H. Russell, did he do, what's the Lawrence of Arabia guy?
That's T.H. Lawrence. This is D.H. Lawrence?
No, well, I meant the, there's another movie. What is the name of the actor that was in it?
Peter O'Toole?
Yeah, there was another movie that's a Criterion one. Let me look this up real quick. Okay. Sorry.
That's okay. So D.H. Lawrence is kind of a Victorian author, but he wrote pretty scandalous novels. You might know Lady Chatterley's Lover, which was a big one, and it's been adapted into some very different stylistic films. But yeah, this is one I'd highly recommend. I think if you guys haven't seen it, you're in for a treat when you get to spine 916. So when you're about 60, a lot of features too. There's two audio commentaries. They're older. There's one with Russell, and then there's another one with the screenwriter. There's a biopic about Ken Russell's life. He did a lot of, have you guys seen the Devils or heard about it?
I haven't.
Well, that's one that is basically banned for being sacrilegious, and Warner Brothers has it in a vault somewhere and will not let it see the light of day. But it's also one of his most well-known and most acclaimed films. Again, Oliver Reed was in it, and it's amazing, and it's really not that bad, but we'll never see it. You can get it from BFI. But there's also a short film, Second Best, based on a D.H. Lawrence story, and starring Alan Bates, some other features. So a pretty stacked release. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but I love this cover. This is very impressionistic. It's two nude people embracing in love. Did you see it?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. but I'm looking at the kind of small version, and maybe if I blow it up, it's a little better, but there does seem to be a sense of like, where does one body end and one begin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is intriguing.
Yeah. And, this movie has a famous, wrestling scene, and there's some homoerotic overtones. So it's interesting that, I'm not going to go further. I don't know if that's a spoiler, but it's a very good film, and it has Glenda Jackson before long before she went into politics, and Oliver Reed is great in everything. I could just watch that guy. Well, I have watched that guy on talk shows, and he's very famous for being drunk all the time and a character. So then we also have on March 27th, King of Jazz by John Murray Anderson. So I'm going to throw out the $50 gift card offer. Am I winning in this one?
You're winning. But I'm not a fan of this game.
Well, for what it's worth, I haven't seen it either. And many of these releases this week I haven't seen. But this is a 1930 color sound film. I think it was probably created to kind of embrace channel the jazz singer and probably cling to this new sound craze. And so I guess it's sort of a musical, kind of a variety show kind of thing. I really have no idea. I've read a little bit about it, but this was a complete out of nowhere, not just Criterion wise, but film school. And I never heard of this before. So now, do you guys buy all the releases, or do you just kind of watch them? Or
mostly watch. I buy them, you know, two or three times a year when the sales come around, because I can't quite afford to buy the outside of that at this point in my life. But maybe one day.
Well, maybe when you get to Spine 500, you'll win the lottery or something. So any thoughts on King of Jazz? Does it look exciting or not? And not yeah, I watched fine.
The, yeah, I watched the trailer. I'm into this giant piano that's going on. With all the little guys playing it.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan of musicals. One of my favorite films of all time is Singing in the Rain.
Oh, cool.
It being also like near that like first steps into sound kind of plays into that as well. But the musical in general, I like. I do get a little bored with some of the earlier ones I've seen because they do seem to have this like these moments where they go into a really long like music or dance number, and it's very irrelevant to the plot. A lot of times it's just like
I'm with you.
The singer of the day, like I think this is how they advertise some of like their music, right? Back in that time, like with they did it with what's the movie with maybe Abbott and Costello where they have the Bugle Boy song, Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
I haven't missed that one.
I don't know. They have it in there, and it's just like it's those who sang that, and that's like how that song got famous and how they promoted like their music from that. And so they do that a lot with like characters that aren't even in the film do come in and do these song and dance numbers, and it gets a little tired to me if they do that too much.
Yeah, I like musicals that more speak to the story. Like you'll probably get to Jacques Demy at some point. I don't know if you've seen Umbrellas, but that's one that where the music is part of the story. Sometimes I'm a sucker for some of the 30s musicals. I really like the Busby Berkeley ones. I don't know if you've seen those, but the musical numbers are really gargantuan. They're the big set pieces. They go on a while, but they're really super impressive. And the big piano that Chris mentioned is kind of reminds me of Busby Berkeley. So I don't know if this will be my favorite release of 2018, but it looks pretty cool. Oh, and I should mention that there's an audio commentary with a jazz and film critic, which is a great combination. Gary Giddens, who I don't know, but and also there's Gene Seymour and Vince Giordano, who I do know. He's some like big band guy. So yeah, quite an interesting month. Are there any here that you're thinking about buying, Chris?
The Passion of Joan of Arc would be that and The Age of Innocence. I'm definitely considering. I'm actually really interested in watching The Passion of Joan of Arc without sound. That would be a cool. Really interesting experience.
Yeah, me too, kind of. But Justin?
I mean, I'll definitely buy Passion of Joan of Arc and try to return my DVD to half price books since I just bought it. Maybe I'll take it back. But I'm definitely buying that one. I would probably blind buy the musical just because I do like musicals so much and just take the risk on it. Maybe Age of Innocence as well. But the other ones I would definitely watch before buying.
Okay. Well, I forgot. I have the Women in Love BFI, so I already own this. My wife thinks that 1960s Alan Bates is super hot, so we have to buy everything that he's in. So that one actually has the same commentary, actually both commentaries and the same short film. So it looks like a lot of actually more features maybe, although there are quite a few. But good. Since you guys both kind of said Passion of Joan of Arc and a little bit Age of Innocence, we did our little poll, which sometimes I remember to do and sometimes I don't, asking our community which they're most excited about. And those were by far the top two, Age of Innocence and Passion of Joan of Arc, were 1 and 2 respectively. And I think the Scorsese factor, I mean, who doesn't want a Scorsese film in the collection? And then
is this the first one on the collection other than not like counting like the Cinema Project?
There's The Last Temptation of Christ is a big one. And there's probably another one. And The Cinema Project is, that's a big deal. So yeah, he's very close to the collection. I think there's another one I'm forgetting. I might be wrong. And then Women in Love was third, King of Jazz fourth, and Baal was fifth. My ratings are so subjective, but as far as excitement compared to most months, if you were to rate this month, what do you think, Chris? Like a 1 to 10 scale?
I would say probably a 4. Like I'm excited. I want to see Ball and I want to dive into that, but they just don't. The titles don't necessarily excite me as much as some of the other ones would.
That's fair. Yeah, and I've heard that. There's not as I've heard some meh comments. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, I'd say probably about a 5 for me. I think it's fair to say that you get really excited when there's a bunch of films that you've seen.
Yeah.
And, having not seen a lot of these.
I'm really excited about the two I haven't seen, I haven't seen Age of Innocence, but The King of Jazz and Bob, I really like when they throw these out of nowhere films, and I tend to end up loving them. So I'm kind of excited about this. Baal might be the one I'm least excited about, but I'm interested in it, if that makes sense. So we also, our community does little predictions too. I don't know if you guys have noticed this yet, but, we put up our prediction thread and, people did okay. It's kind of hit or miss with this, but, Passion of Joan of Arc was the third top choice. Dead Man and Grand Budapest Hotel were one and two. Those didn't happen. I think Dead Man will probably be pretty soon. And then there was, Chaplin Lloyd. I think that one is showing up every month. Tree of Life, Bringing Up Baby, The Mirror. Dirzu Osala. Somebody remarked that this was probably the month with the most, as far as quantity, the most different predictions. I guess there's a lot of films out there. So any of these predictions, I don't know if you guys saw the thread or not, but any predictions that you're jazzed about?
If Bringing Up Baby came out, that is another one of my favorite movies of all time. Actually, I did the poll and I chose that one just... Not that I had any inclination that it would come out, but it's just really wishful thinking.
And part of that is wish. I mean, I ask people to be reasonable and not like just put their favorite film of all time, like, you know, or like something stupid like Home Alone. But Bringing Up Baby, actually, I think it will come out, and it's a good screwball comedy. Chris, do you have any big wish list titles or?
I really love Lestrada. That's a really great movie. And Grand Budapest Hotel, of course. Both those are ones that I – oh, Notorious, too. I really love that movie.
Yeah.
Any Hitchcock, I'm always excited about.
Well, I think they're all three pretty likely. So that's so good choices there. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, I hope. all right. Well, we'll get into this month's slate. Actually, we're done for 2017. They just released the last three titles of the year this past week, which was Election, this Monterey Pop box set, and General Idi Amin Dada, A Self-Portrait. I don't know if I should bring my gift certificate offer up. And then the week prior to that was the 100 Years of Olympics, which is basically a massive tome, bigger than most things I own. So do you guys have any thoughts about this month's slate of releases, Chris?
The years of Olympics, 100 years of Olympics sounds like a massive undertaking that I'd be excited. I love Election. I'm not familiar with the other ones as much, but Election's really good.
Election isn't. In fact, we'll be talking about Election. So, Justin, any thoughts on these?
Yeah, I mean, kind of the same as Chris. The 100 years of Olympics seems really interesting. I'd have to watch a bunch of those before I kind of decide to buy it. I haven't even looked at the price because I just assume that it's way more than I can afford.
It's more than a month of releases, so there's that. Yeah, it's like $220, I think, if you go on Amazon. Maybe $200 if you wait for a sale, but list price is $400. So, yeah.
Oh, that's not as bad as I thought.
Really? Okay. It's a car payment, basically, depending on the car. I did get it. It was my early Christmas present to myself. And I've watched, I'm binging for our best of the year. So I'm trying to watch as many as possible. So I'm through disc four and it's pretty amazing. I'm still in the silent period and I love it. It's just great. It's weird though. And some of it's funny. like unintentionally funny, like seeing like little things, the pole vault in the silent era. Like I cringe watching that because they just have a little bit of sand. And so people are jumping up. I don't know what it is, 10, 20 feet. No, I think like 12 feet. And then landing on their, sometimes they land terribly. They land on, I'm sure there's so many injuries, so many broken legs. And they just put a little bit of sand, like hard sand out there. And it's just, it's funny, but in that, oh shit, somebody probably got hurt funny. And I was like, okay, did they not have beds back in 1912 or did they not have feathers or anything? And then there's another sport. I saw padding. I'm like, guys, be cool to your athletes. And there's skiing on one that somebody broke their legs. And yeah. Oh, and also there, I watched, I'm getting excited about this, but there was a 1924 or 28 film from St. Moritz, where there was full frontal nudity in an Olympic film. And there's a guy and a girl, and they're both in like a little, what do they call the little underwear onesie thingy, kind of like a Borat thingy almost. And they are in the freezing, on the snowy mountains, and they're just wearing this, and the girl is exposed, topless. And they go skiing. It's just so random. So anyway, it's a great set, and I'm really going to enjoy that one. I think I'm going to finish a lot quicker than I thought. So that's December. Do you guys have any favorites of the year? Just from what you've seen, or I don't know if you've looked at the year's releases, but anything jump out
for Criterion releases specifically?
Yeah,
I guess. When did His Girl Friday come out?
Very beginning of the year. So that's a good one.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to pick that one because I love it.
Yeah. And Chris, do you have any that jump out? Or?
I'd have to look at a list of the ones. So I'm not – right off, I don't know of any.
Well, there's Election. You already
Oh, Election. That, okay. So. Yeah, Election I like a lot.
Yeah. Well, we're about to do our show, so I won't spoil mine. But it was a pretty good year. And I think probably that'll be a thing. Going forward.
Oh, did Le Samurai come out this year? Reissue?
Which one?
Le Samurai?
It did. It did. In fact, that's part of my catch-up. I just watched that about a week ago. Is that your favorite?
Yeah, that's my pick.
Yeah, hip slick and cool. DeLome, I think that's how you... Yeah, I'm a big Melville fan, so that's...
Yeah, Melville's awesome.
He is. Well, I'm going to get to some Criterion news, and it's okay if you guys haven't seen this. I haven't seen many, in fact, really any of these. But so I'll kind of just run through these. There was Fassbender's 8 Hours a Day restoration that's coming to Janus Films. And I don't know if you guys are plugged into Janus. Obviously, you've seen the logo. But basically, if a movie is released theatrically through Janus, that means it's going to come to the collection. So there's going to be a Fassbender miniseries. So yeah, I mentioned the guy was prolific. So this is yet another example. I haven't seen it, so I can't comment. But so I know you guys haven't, we already talked about Fassbender, but any thoughts on 8 Hours a Day?
Just one more to the list of stuff to see.
It's going to be a big list. There was also a Memories of Underdevelopment tweet, which is a Cuban film, which I haven't seen either, but I'm interested in, and I think it's probably about how Cuba is underdeveloped. So that I think is also coming. And then, there was something I was kind of excited about, because we have a 3 degrees connection with Carlos Reygadas. He's a Mexican director, and he did Post Enibris Lux and some others. So there was a article that came out in Noticias Monterrey in Spanish, which thank you Google Translate, said that all four of his films are going to come to the Criterion Collection, including or beginning with Japan. And he's kind of an experimental filmmaker. Our connection is we talked to Sean Baker. He directed Florida Project and Tangerine, and they share the same cinematographer. So I doubt if you guys know Reygadas. Correct me if I'm wrong. Do you?
Nope, you nailed it.
But do you know Sean Baker or his work at the Florida Project is a big one this year?
I'm familiar with both films. I haven't seen either one. I've seen part of Tangerine. I watched it once, but I never got to get too far into it before I had to do something else.
The Florida Project's on my list to see this year for sure.
Yeah.
It's a big one. And yeah, it's getting some Oscar buzz. So it's Sean Baker's a super cool guy, big film buff, just like us. And so, yeah, I'm sure he's very excited about that, although he probably can't breathe because he's so damn busy right now with award season. There was also Sight and Sound did their compilation Best Blu-rays of the Year, and it's a mammoth list. It has pretty much everybody in the UK that's anybody, including a few friends of ours. I think probably – I'd have to look at the list, but I think some people that have been on the show, and they listed their favorite Blu-rays. So there were a lot of Criterions on the list, and I'll put those in the show notes for anybody that wants to check them out. And also there was the National Film Registry – announcements. Actually, the connection with one of your shows, Titanic, is going to be on the National Film Registry. So, are you excited about that, Justin?
Chris is, because he's never seen it, and now that it'll always be available and never it'll be preserved well for him when he finally gets around to watching it.
I think you're pretty safe, Chris, on that front.
Yeah, it'll be there.
The highest grossing film in the world. So I haven't finished your episode yet, I don't want to spoil it for everybody, but can I ask, did you like the other Titanic, A Night to Remember?
Oh, yeah. This was the first one. Most of the other ones I had seen as we were going through the list so far. And this was the first one where I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about this film. And it turned out that I loved it. It was really, really good.
It is. I love it, too. Yeah. So I'll look forward to listening to the rest of your episode. Were you on board, Justin?
With Night to Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was great. I've actually owned it for like 4 years. Because I found it at like really cheap for like $5 at a used movie store. And so I bought it and I just kind of dreaded watching it a little bit, I guess, because I already knew the story and I was like, how interesting is this going to be? And I put it on late at night. My girlfriend was like, I'll never make it through this, but I'll sit here for a minute. And we both watched like the whole thing.
It's great. Yeah.
It's so good.
I was like you. It was one of those I just kind of waited around to watch. But then one day I put it in and yeah, I was hypnotized. And you know, I think the best thing about it is there's no Jack and Rose. Chrissy, you laughed. So I guess you get that. No Leo. So there were some other films that were notable. Field of Dreams is a big one. If they're selected, that doesn't mean they're coming to Criterion or anything, but they're just dubbed and deemed important. Memento is awesome. To Sleep with Anger, I think that one, I'm confident that'll come to Criterion. Only Angels Have Wings is already on Criterion. Spartacus is out of print, so you guys will get to that someday. And then there's like The Goonies and Dumbo and Superman, which will never come to Criterion. Yeah. But
Die Hard,
yeah. Well, yeah, you never know. Never know. So yeah, I always enjoy those lists, but
yeah, I think my favorite on here is Ace in the Hole. Good one. I was really excited to see that one. That one is just incredible.
And kind of relevant still, would you say?
Very relevant.
Maybe.
I mean, I guess I watched it probably 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe even a little longer, but it was relevant then. I'm sure it still is now.
It's still relevant. Trust me, maybe more relevant. There's also Gentleman's Agreement, which is on there. That's Elia Kazan. A lot of people don't like this one because it's a little heavy handed and, you know, it's a very, anti-Semitic message. I do like it, actually. I think it's a good film. Not a great film, but I like that they included it. I think it's important just because, you know, it was pretty daring for the time. So that's Sight and Sound. I'm getting some weird notifications. Oh, the website Noticias Ecatepec wants to get me to subscribe. I don't speak Spanish, so I'll pass.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I'm sure it's a great publication. Sorry.
Yeah, if I can jump back to the Sight and Sound real quick.
Please.
The one thing that I got really excited going through was the number of people who included the Buster Keaton trilogy. Like, I'm Buster Keaton fan. It looks like it's got Sherlock Jr., the General, and Steamboat Bill Jr. And I don't know if that's an updated version. Like, I have the Kino Blu-ray releases of all of those, but I don't know if this is a new version or what.
It is, yeah. This was, I think it was Masters of Cinema or Eureka. And so it's a Region B release. So that's one thing about the Sight and Sound is a lot of them are UK exclusive. That was another birthday gift, why not? It was a birthday gift to myself. So I actually just got it a few weeks ago and I haven't watched it, but man, those movies are just so fun. I love Buster Keaton. And that reminds me, I need to go watch those.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
Or rewatch those.
Yeah, but I guess I just hope that, like, if it is new versions updated, that, like, eventually whatever's on there, the version that's on there, if it looks better than what we have, I hope it comes over here. Yeah. I'll buy them immediately.
Not to be critical of Kino, but if I were to put my eggs in a basket, I'd put them on the Eureka basket. They tend to do good stuff, but it's very possible that the transfers are the same. It just might be better supplements and that sort of thing. All right. Well, I didn't ask you guys to do a lot of homework, but the one thing I did ask you to was to watch a, I don't know, 3+ hour epic movie. So, from a famous director, Barry Lyndon. He's not a director. He's a not even a real person. From Stanley Kubrick, 1975. Heard of Stanley Kubrick?
Yeah, once or twice. I've seen, you know, some of his films.
He's kind of well known. 2001, Dr. Strangelove. But Barry Lyndon is, well, one thing I like about Kubrick is he just does so many different genres. But Barry Lyndon was a the historical epic genre, even though it's not really historic. It's, again, fake. So it's a 3-hour 18th century English tale. Has Ryan O'Neill. I don't know if you know him, but I personally think he's kind of terrible.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm from anything other than watching this movie.
He was in Paper Moon, wasn't he?
He was in Paper Moon. He's good in Paper Moon, actually. But in this, he's kind of terrible. He's in Love Story. So if you really want to, if you want to, it's what was the saying? If you something about saying sorry, I forget. Oh, Love Story is horrific. I'm sorry. Anybody that likes it. But this is one of that's considered one of his best. And that's pretty high praise. It's a little slower pace, although compared to like 2001, you know, it's not too far off. But it's very aesthetically pleasing, I'd say. So, I'll start with you, Chris. Had you seen this before or have you seen much Kubrick?
I think I've seen all of Kubrick. And I'd seen this before, but it'd been a while, and I liked it so much better this time. I watched it last night, and it maybe it's because as I've gotten older, I've been able to appreciate things that are a little bit slower. But it kind of almost it was, you know, aesthetically pleasing for sure. It had a connection to Children of Men to me that where there's always something going on in the background that was, you know, like there's always something to look at. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Kubrick was nothing if not meticulous. Everything was very deliberate in the frame. And I don't know if you got to the features. There were a lot of features on this one, but just hearing everything that went into putting this together, you know, it took him a long time. The production designer had a nervous breakdown.
I can believe that.
Yeah, I can too. Working with Stanley is probably not the easiest thing. So, Justin, had you seen it before?
No, this is my first time, and I think this and I guess Killer's Kiss. That's Kubrick, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Those are the two that I had not seen of his. So now I just have the ones. But yeah, this is my first time to watch it.
Oh, so you've seen Fear and Desire?
Nope. You were right. There's two more.
That's usually the in fact, I haven't seen that. I have it. It's supposedly not that good. Killer's Kiss is pretty good, but it's still, you know, he definitely hit his stride with, actually The Killing, I think, is really where he really, found his voice. But, what'd you think, Justin?
I thought it was great. I was a little not interested or like excited by the trailer for it, but once I started watching it, got into it, it was a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's really funny, and I'm not sure how many times that's me laughing with the movie or laughing at it, but I did find a lot of it really funny.
It is funny. And sometimes, well, I won't get into the social critique just yet, but my experience is very much like you, Chris. I watched it, I don't know how long. It hasn't been that long, probably about 5 years ago. I waited on it. But I wouldn't say I didn't like it. I rate everything. And my rating was 4 out of 5. So that's pretty good. But it didn't hold a special place in my memory. I remember hating Ryan O'Neill and that kind of, cause I think he is kind of stiff and wooden in the first half, especially. So this time and maybe just 5 years and watching, you know, a few slow Criterions, will do that to you. But I really just fell in love with it, even more so. And actually, even despite Ryan O'Neill, this is almost Ryan O'Neill bad performance, proof, I think. And the second half, 3 hours just flew by, I think. Maybe it dragged a little bit in the middle, but, But yeah, no, I thought it was pretty spectacular. And the cinematography, I mean, this is a dumb question asking if you liked the cinematography, but did anything stand out to you guys?
There's so much of the film that just looks like a painting, and it, you could tell that a lot of the characters in like the background and the sides are like posed like they were in like a Renaissance paintings. And then that maybe comes from like all the art history classes that I had to take, but I just, I kept thinking of the, these like Renaissance paintings the whole time. The big one, like the most obvious example was the scene where the son comes up to Barry to challenge him to the duel. And I tell him that he doesn't have satisfaction or whatever.
Such a great scene.
Yeah. Like that shot of Barry slaps in the chair and like everyone around the poker table, they look like they're in a painting because most of them aren't moving and they're just the way they're set up. It's beautiful.
Did you guys get the Criterion, or did you just, I mean, there's like a gazillion editions of this out there.
I did. I went yesterday morning and picked up the Criterion from Barnes and Noble, and I didn't get much time to dive into the special features, but I did watch like the 15-minute thing that it was with the gaffer and the focus puller.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was good.
Talking about production.
Well, there's one of the last ones is this art historian at MoMA. I forget his name. I think it was like Adam Eaker or something like that. And he talks about the painting influence, and he shows a lot of paintings, you know, the 18th century paintings, and then how they were filmed in the film, and you know, basically the ones that that influenced Kubrick. And some of them might be reaches, but I think most of them were pretty spot on. So that was like, that was really, really cool to see. And yeah, he was trying to capture that that 18th century Victorian spirit, or not pre-Victorian actually, but the that vibe. And basically, you know, there's no photos or movies back then, so paintings are what you have to go on. I know you guys covered Beauty and the Beast, so did you? And I haven't finished that episode yet, but did you guys get into the Vermeer stuff?
I don't think so.
Okay. No.
Well, that's a movie that's based on Vermeer, the Dutch painter. So yeah, maybe I also, like you, Justin, I appreciate art history in my films. What'd you guys think? Did you guys think it was slow? Chris, you mentioned you first thought it was slow, but,
When I first watched it, you know, probably about the same time that you did 5 or 6 years ago, I thought it was slow. But this time, I mean, there's so much to watch in every frame that it was like, there may not be a lot of story going on, but there's so much to watch in the background of the frame or what's going on in the sides. So many extras, doing stuff that I found that it was exciting. I think actually that's why Ryan O'Neal can be in this movie and it'd still be a good movie is, you know, like he's just posed there, you know, like he doesn't have to do a lot.
he's almost like Forrest Gump in a way. Not that Tom Hanks was, you know, nothing against his performance as Gump, but basically he just kind of like takes a tour of England and elsewhere during this period, Austria and everything. Well, I really appreciated how, you know, he was in no hurry with these scenes, but sometimes it worked, like the duel scenes, and I won't spoil anything, but there's so much tension in both of those scenes. And the music too, the latter duel scene, I think probably time wise, probably takes maybe 15, 20 minutes, but there's that just drum, boom, boom, and really creates suspense. So, Justin, any scenes jump out at you from this?
Well, the big one that I really loved was that latter duel scene. Like you said, I love the time that he took with it. And I think it's hard to say that this film isn't slow. Like there's, right. I think you could argue that it's not boring, and that's a different argument, right? Like slow isn't necessarily a bad thing. Cause you know, like I'm a big fan of like Sergio Leone and 2001, and those are both definitely like slow films, but that slow, I guess, similar. That's what the duel scene reminded me of. It kind of felt like some Sergio Leone sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember when Barry Lyndon came out. I don't know if this was pre or post Sergio Leone.
Oh, definitely post, mid 70s. So yeah, like, once upon a time in the West, that opening scene, which probably takes about the same amount of time, cinema time, as The Duel, but it's basically just characters looking at each other and great yeah. music playing. Yeah, it definitely captures that essence. So what do you think of the society critiques, or what do you think they were trying to say about?
Well, I thought that's where a lot of the humor came from for me. Like the first half of it felt almost like a comedy of manners, mm-hmm. sort of like
fish out like of water kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's things that are maybe shouldn't be funny. And this is one of those things where I don't know if I'm laughing with or at the film, but like the scene where Barry's first joined the army and they're marching towards that line of whoever it is that they're fighting. I can't recall, but like they're just marching and getting shot. Right. And it's like, I know that like with the warfare at the time, it was about that, like mm-hmm. being honorable and marching and in a straight line and like where you can just be picked off really easily, but like no one's like running and hiding. And cause that was like kind of a dishonorable way to fight. Right. And like, mm-hmm. It's just kind of funny that to watch now and see that, like, why would you fight that way? Like, it's just the worst way to fight to me.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of fights, I thought the little military fight that he had with the big ox guy was kind of, it's violent, but kind of funny just how he hands him his you know what. Yeah, it sounds like you guys are enthused about this one. So would you say that this is among Kubrick's best? And I know that's a high... That's a lofty statement, but
it's probably just slightly above mid-tier for me. Okay. I guess
that's fair.
I think it's one of his best. I think it's yeah. up there with 2001. It's a different genre, you know, like what we were talking about. But I think it's one of his best.
I think so too. And I think maybe Justin, you might appreciate a second time, because to be honest with you, even though I liked it the first time, I wasn't like, it was kind of like our what we're talking about with A Night to Remember. It wasn't one that I was like in a hurry to put back in, you know, this 3-hour epic that I remember as being kind of slow paced. But I think it bears, getting the plot stuff out of the way, it's a good second watch. So you might appreciate it down the road. And it just looks so fantastic. So. All right.
Yeah, well, that's how I felt with, that's how I felt with every Kubrick film that I've seen so far. Like on first viewing, I've kind of been not appreciated as much. Like it's always the second time where it gets me, maybe with the exception of like Full Metal Jacket, I find harder to watch on like a second mm-hmm. viewing
yeah.
than the first, but.
And yeah. I hate to be the guy when people don't like something to say, well, watch it again. That's like, okay, well, yeah, I didn't like it. Why would I, you know, but
yeah. Ebert has a quote that I always like live by, that like watching a movie again makes the great movies greater and the bad movies worse. So like I'm fully subscribed to that theory.
That's great. Shall we wrap up Barry Lyndon? Any last thoughts or?
I loved it. Thank you for giving me this homework so that I could watch it again.
Yeah. Yeah. I've known about it for years and years and years, and I just haven't got around to it. So I'm just so happy when you were like, I'm watching Barry Lyndon. You want to talk about that? I said, yes.
Well, I
need that reason.
The cool thing is in 30 years, when you guys get to it on podcasts, assuming there are podcasts by then and assuming there are still discs, you know, it's not just implanted in our brains somehow. But you'll rewatch it and, I'll still be on this planet, but I'll be, I'm looking forward to listening to that episode.
I'm going to save this file. So that we actually don't have to.
I want to extend, an invitation. For you to come on our show in 30 years, and we can talk about it again.
Yeah, what date's good for you?
Yeah,
I'll take my dentures out, or I'll put my dentures in. Actually, probably. 30 years. I think I'm free. We'll put it on my calendar. All right. Well, we do this little thing called Short Takes, where we talk about a movie that we've seen recently. And I know you guys have, as we just established, you guys have been watching a ton of movies lately. So I hope you found something good. But Chris, have you watched anything recently on Criterion?
Yeah. So kind of just like Barry Lyndon, I got to watch Seven Samurai again for a second time. And actually, I think it was probably like a third or fourth time, really. But I can't tell you how much I appreciate this film. Just everything that's gone into it, and the deep focus. And, you know, Justin and I talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Spine 2.
Yes, Vine number two. So about 6 weeks ago, I guess. And yeah, it's just a great film. I love it.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about that film, I forget the running time, but it's not so short. It's like, I think three and a half. Yeah. But it's very popular. Like, it's, if you look, probably if there's a way to gauge how many people own what percentage of the Criterion, it's probably top five, maybe even number one. It's so popular. But speaking of watching something twice, I think this is one where you really have to see it a second time to really get the, get something out of it. I think I've seen it three times and it's been a good 10 years. So, yeah, good one. Chris, have you seen anything aside from the ones you've seen every week or maybe including those? Anything?
No, I actually, so the Seven Samurais,
Oh, I said Chris.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Justin. See, I can't tell you guys apart.
That's fine. So yeah, again, in doing our podcast, we've been going through the spine and that's kind of been the main chunk of Criterion that I've been watching lately. So, the one that really sticks out in my mind that I was just so happy to watch again is Fellini's Armored. And Fellini is one of my favorite directors of all time. And so I was just, this is my second time to see it. The first time was probably 5-6 years ago. So I was just super happy to revisit it. And especially having seen more Fellini since the first time that I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really good. Really like over the top caricatures that just stick with you and stick in your head. And good. It's one of those films that when you go back to watch it again, it's like you're seeing old friends and revisiting your memories.
Yeah, it seems very personal to Fellini. I mean, it is very personal. I think it is based on his youth. And it's not long as the ones we've talked about, but it feels like it's just as big. I don't know what it is. It just feels like an epic kind of tale. Our connection is I know the cover artist that did the Criterion, which I think is gorgeous. She did it probably, it's Caitlin Kuhlwald, and she's been on the show a couple times, but she did it about 10 years ago. And actually it's not her favorite, but because it was 10 years ago and she's, feels like she's matured since then. Yeah, good pick. So did you like it, Chris? I haven't heard that episode yet.
Oh, I loved it. And you know, we're kind of going with a theme here, but it's better the more times you watch it. The more times you go back to it, you recognize the characters and they actually like grow in depth. Like I think the second time you've seen it, you know, I really enjoyed it.
It's like the first time you watch it there, it opens up with like the whole festival and the witch burning. And most of the characters you meet later are there, but the first time you watch it, they're just like these people that you don't know. So like when you go back on a second viewing, when you're watching that scene, you're like, oh, there's the dad. And right. Oh, there's, you know, the woman in the red dress, and you know so much more about them. It definitely lends itself to repeat viewing.
I can't remember which one is the woman with the red dress, but if I remember, no, I'm thinking of somebody else. Never mind. You probably know who I'm thinking of. In fact, it's been a little while since I've gone down that road, but it's probably like seeing your old family again. I can't. This is one of late Fellini gets a little critical. People get critical about him just because he got more into the weird, the mystique. But this one seems like, I mean, it definitely has the vibrant colors that a lot of his late works have, but it doesn't have that the carnival. Actually, it's carnivalesque in the description, but it's not as whacked as like Satyricon or something. It seems pretty grounded. I think that's just because of the personal stuff. So,
yeah, it's really accessible compared to like Roma and Satyricon.
Yeah, good. That's the word I was looking for, accessible. So, mine was Election. I rewatched this. I had seen it when it came out, actually, and it was this big indie hit. And I liked it when it came out, but I didn't think it would age well. I don't know why. I haven't seen it since, but I just remember it fondly. And I thought, you know, some, especially comedies, sometimes they don't age as well, but I just watched it the other night and I was hooked again. It's so funny. And speaking of quirky characters and the little things and maybe they're intentional, maybe they're not, but it's just, yeah, it's very out there, but yeah, if you guys haven't seen Election, I think you guys have, right?
Yeah.
So listeners, if you haven't seen Election, pick it up. People hate on the cover art because it has the cupcakes,
Oh, the cupcake's amazing. That's like the best image. Yeah, it's so good.
I think I had my pitchfork out when I first saw the cover, but after rewatching it, it fits. I mean, it's so in your face, and it should be. Tracy Flick is obnoxious, and her cover should be too. But I love this movie, and I boosted my rating for this too. I'm coming around on things a little more these days, but yeah, pick up the Blu-ray, you guys and listeners, if you can. It's I don't know, might make one of my favorites of the year.
How are the special? Did you watch any of the special features? Are they good?
Didn't have time. I watched one. One thing that was really cool about the features is, so this is set, it takes place in Nebraska, in Omaha, and Payne is from there, I guess, and he really wanted to capture a film and give it a sense of place of Omaha, not Hollywood or New York. And so they filmed in a real high school, and they filmed the scenes during the school year. They used students as extras, and so they first went to one school and they sent them the script and they said, can we use this, your Omaha high school? And of course the script is pretty risque. So the superintendent said, no way. Mm-hmm. So what they did then is they sent a script, just the script, the scenes that take place in the high school, which are pretty tame. And they sent that to another school in the county next door. And that, they said, sure, go ahead. And then the interview, the piece had that person, talking about it and saying, yeah, if I had to do it over again, I probably would have not let them shoot that. So yeah, that was a little fun. It was like an MTV Films, little documentary. So yeah, I'd recommend it. All right. Well, on this show, we talk about Filmstruck. So you guys that don't buy every release in the world, have you gotten into Filmstruck yet?
I'm in the middle of my 2-week free trial right now, and then I'll be an official member.
All right. Well, you kind of are, but yeah, if you're not going to buy all these, I think I'd recommend it. You might save some cash over the long haul. Have you subscribed, Chris?
Yeah, I love Filmstruck. There's this old documentary about the Z Channel, and I think this is the closest thing. Yeah. Z Channel was a thing back in California where they played a bunch of Fellini films and stuff like this, and I think this is the closest thing we can get to that. I always was super jealous of the Z Channel. So
have you seen a Magnificent Obsession, the documentary?
No.
Oh, it's about Z Channel. I don't think it's on here, but
that's the subtitle. It's called Z Channel and Magnificent
Obsession. Yeah, that's how I know about Z Channel.
Me too.
One of the things that got me into film was little backstory. Chris and I used to work at Blockbuster together.
Right. You talk about that on your show, which is, I think, is awesome. What would you have recommended me in 95?
95?
Well, I'm trying to think of when Blockbuster. So when did you guys work there?
It was 07 to 09.
Okay. In my memory, Blockbusters were fading around that time. It might be your
memory. Yeah, they were.
Yeah, they were. We were constantly under pressure to like sell more and get people to sign passes for like that reason. And they were scared of Netflix and trying to implement their own sort of like Blockbuster online service that just wasn't as good.
I subscribed to it. It wasn't as good. You're right.
I had it for free and I didn't, and I used Netflix because Netflix was better.
So you guys went down with the ship.
Mostly. I got out of it a little bit cause I went to school, but,
A little bit earlier, before it actually went down, but yeah, it was rough.
So you got on the, Chris doesn't know this, but you got on the door, the wooden door.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
I'll never let go.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah. You can't really not be spoiled on, that's for those who haven't seen it, the two listeners, that's Titanic. Well, one thing I love Filmstruck and I sing its praises every week, but, one cool thing is I won swag this week. This is pretty random and I don't think it's cause I do this podcast, but cause I've had the host of Filmstruck on the show, but I randomly, won. Maybe it is from this podcast. I don't know, but I randomly won some swag. So they're sending me something next week and they didn't tell me what it is. I already have a shirt. So it's, and they didn't ask my shirt size. So no, it's not that, but, yeah, on the next episode, I'll let you guys know what that is, but, I'm pretty stoked.
That's awesome.
Subscribe and you might win some swag. It might be a coaster. I don't know. But, yeah, so we go through every week and talk about the stuff that comes out. So yeah, the main channel this week, director of the week was Palin Pressburger. Speaking of which, they had, I think, 15 of their films, Have you guys gotten into Powell and Pressburger yet?
Yes.
I have. You probably have. Previously. I've seen the Red Shoes and Black Narcissus.
Oh.
Black Narcissus and Red Shoes, yeah.
Yeah, I think the first... I don't have my spines memorized, but I think the first one might be Blimp. Which, speaking of long...
Life and Death of Colonel Blimp.
Yeah, oh boy, it's so good. I don't think there's anybody better in the 40s and early 50s at using color. But yeah, they're the director of the week on Filmstruck. And sorry, let me pull up Filmstruck. So on the main channel. And I think I'd mentioned a couple weeks ago they were picking a lot of obscure directors. So this one, not so much. Black Narcissus is maybe one of my favorite films of all time. I think A Matter of Life and Death might come out on the Criterion Collection. There's rumors. So I heard that this is not the restored print, so if you want to watch that, might want to wait. But any other thoughts on Powell and Pressburger?
Yeah, if anyone hasn't seen him, watch him, at least based on my experience, which is Red Shoes, Black Narcissus, and 49th Parallel. They did that one, right?
Yeah,
they did, yeah.
But yeah, Red Shoes and Black Narcissus specifically are amazing. They're one of the ones I watched really early on when I was getting into Criterion. I didn't have to be like cultured really to fully enjoy them.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Red Shoes, we were just talking about musical numbers that really don't have much to do about the film, but I'd argue that I think it's like a 15-minute musical sequence or, you know, ballet sequence is riveting in that movie. Chris, have you seen much from these guys?
Yeah, the Red Shoes and Black Narcissus. I don't think I've seen the 49th Parallel, but yeah, everything I've seen from them I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, I'm not as big on 49th Parallel. It's very jingoistic. So that maybe, were you about to say something else, Chris?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was done.
Oh.
All right. Well, the next thing is, fan favorites. And this was interesting. I don't know how they figured this out, but, they said a collection of films comprised by the fans of, Criterion or of the Filmstruck. So maybe it was part of their surveys. So they got Battleship Potemkin, Metropolis, L'Age d'Or, Mickey and Nikki, which stands out, or Mikey and Nikki, and then Pandora and the Flying Dutchman. So that's a motley crew. Justin, have you seen any of these?
I don't think so. I'm trying to log into Filmstruck here.
It's okay.
So I can follow along, but so I missed what you said. I missed the list. I'm sorry.
Well, Metropolis and Battleship Potemkin are probably the biggest.
Oh. Potemkin I've seen. Metropolis I have not.
The Odessa Steps. Metropolis is amazing. It just came out. A new restoration came out from overseas again. So Chris, any of these?
Yeah, the same too. Metropolis and the Battleship Potemkin I've seen. I really enjoyed the Metropolis. Yeah, I'll watch it again for sure.
Yeah, and Potemkin is the Odessa Steps, which was recreated in Untouchables. But good movies. I would expect, like we mentioned, His Girl Friday, something like that, to be fan favorites, because there's an overlap of TCM and Criterion people. But anyway, it was kind of a lighter week on the Criterion Channel this week. We had a few digital spines, so we had 235. I'm trying to calculate the weeks that you or the years that it'll take for you guys, but and speaking of long historical epic fiction films, this is The Leopard by Luchino Visconti. So I don't know if I'm ready for my $50 gift certificate, but I'm going to ask if you guys have seen it.
I have, actually.
All right. Well, good thing I didn't offer that up.
Yeah. Quentin Tarantino. It's like one of Quentin Tarantino's favorite films. That's how I got into it. He like talked about it. He used to work at a video store, and of course, he was like, yeah, The Leopard. Yeah. And that's why I watched it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. During the Blockbuster days, Chris sold me his copy for $5, his DVD, his DVD Leopard, one time. And he also sold me his Antoine Donnell box set, which is how I own that. And nice. I have not got around to watching The Leopard. It's just been sitting on my shelf for years.
It's another one that's tough to motivate yourself to watch. But yeah, my when I think of The Leopard, I think of Mutton Chops, Merton Lancaster's big sideburns there. But and then another digital spine was Phoenix, which is 809. So yeah, I'm not going to appear on that show, guys. I'm busy that week. But have you guys seen Phoenix yet?
No, I'm not familiar.
I don't think I've heard of it.
It's pretty good. It's a newer film, German, and it's like kind of Hitchcockian suspense thriller. It's good. That makes me think is because Criterion puts out new films and old films. I do kind of wonder if something like Phoenix will hold up in 30 years. I mean, obviously, if Criterion's a thing, it'll be a thing. But yeah, I don't know. Not with The Leopard, I don't think. And then there's another digital spine. I Am Curious, which is spine 179. So that's what, I don't know, 5 years. Is that
something like that? Yeah, 5-6 years. You're right.
I don't like this movie. I'm just going to say that right now. So I think you guys
tried to watch Blue, and I had the same reaction.
Yeah,
I didn't finish it.
Yeah. Well, guess what? In 5 and 6 years, you're gonna be obligated. Have you seen any of this, Chris?
No, I have not.
All right, well, we have our Tuesday short feature, and I try to, well, no, I intend to watch these usually, but I've been failing lately. But Return to Glenniscowl, which is 1951, was the short. I didn't see it. And then a big one, Carol Reed's The Third Man, with Orson Welles as Harry Lime. So that's one of my favorite noirs, one of my favorite chase scenes in sewers, but, one of my favorite Ferris Wheel scenes. But have you guys seen The Third Man?
Yes.
Yeah, I have.
So good. I hope you agree.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I was actually, when I watched it shortly after, I played like a movie trivia game with somebody. And one of the questions, like literally like a week later, was like, what film opens with the line, like, I never knew the old streets of Vienna? And I was like, cool. Oh, yes. And so I've always like remembered that moment because I think I ended up winning that. And that was part of it. So I'm awesome. Always grateful to Third Man for that win.
And well, I don't know if you guys heard the episode. We talked about Othello last week or the week before, and we talked about how he made this movie during the filming of Othello to fund the filming of Othello. And so if it weren't for the development problems on that, we wouldn't have had what I think is maybe like the best villain in history. So that's kind of strange. We also had a Friday double feature was Burden of Dreams and Fitzcarraldo. So that's Herzog and Kinski. Have you guys gone down the Herzog and Kinski rabbit hole?
I've only taken my first step with Aguirre, The Wrath of God.
That's a good first step. And they're, well, the point is they're both nuts. I think, I forget the spine, but Burden of Dreams is a documentary about their relationship, or actually about Fitzcarraldo and the filming of that. So it's a good pairing. So I would recommend you watch somehow Fitzcarraldo, before you watch Burden of Dreams. I don't have my spines in front of me, but, yeah, they're nuts. We talked to, Alex Cox about them actually. And he said that Herzog was crazier than Kinski, which was very controversial, I thought. Have you seen any, Chris?
No, I have not.
Well, I highly, when you watch Burden of Dreams, you'll be really, enticed. It's one of the most enigmatic, manic, cinematic relationships in history. Very, very, interesting. So, all right. Well, we also had some new additions to the channel, which were, only Juzo Atami films. If you don't know, that's the person that directed Tampopo. Do you like ramen noodles?
Yeah, love ramen.
Well, have you seen Tampopo?
I have not.
It's a recent spine, so I would not wait 30 years to get to that one. It's worth it. It's one of the best food movies of all time. But I have not
love seen food.
I like food too. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, you made it through your first episode of Criterion Now. Yay. So now we get to the fun stuff, the stuff that, I think it's all fun, but
it's all been fun. What are you talking about?
It is fun. Yeah. So let's talk about stuff that's not Criterion related. So piece of flair, Chris, what's your piece of flair? Something that's not related to Criterion that you're digging.
Well, you know, this week, there's this little movie that came out that I went and watched. Star Wars. I don't know if you've heard of it. Have you seen it?
Star what?
Wars.
WAR.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the one with the Star Warrior. I know that one very well.
Yeah. Yeah. I went and saw this Thursday opening night, and I love Rian Johnson.
Me too.
Brick and Looper and Brothers Bloom. And Rian Johnson is one of those guys where you follow him. Like, I watched Brick, and so he hadn't done anything else. And then I followed him throughout his whole career. And when he got Star Wars, I was so happy for him, you know, like, because I followed him, you know, because I'd been rooting for him the whole time. And so it was just really exciting. And he did not disappoint. I really enjoyed Star Wars.
Cool. Yeah. He's probably, he probably goes back to your Blockbuster days, doesn't he?
Yeah, actually, I saw Brick. I bought it from Blockbuster. Yeah,
one of the first movies Chris recommended when I started working there to me to watch, like, he lent me Brick.
So. Cool. All right. Good job, Chris. Yeah, I think I actually did buy a previously viewed.
Yeah, exactly.
First. I have a few of those that, there's not much resale value on those pieces. what's interesting is I've heard mixed things, and it seems like the diehard, like, not film school kind of people, like the people that might like the prequels don't like this one. And then the people that like art films like us like it. So is that, don't spoil please, but is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
I listened to, or I read a review or something like kind of about all the conflict that's happening. But, you know, I think that there's some things that happen that, if you've been waiting to see this movie for a long time, you know, for 30 years since Return of the Jedi, things happen, and I could see you being upset, but I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a good choice.
I can tell you're walking the spoiler tightrope.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
I don't know that helped or made any sense without the spoilers.
Yeah, without going into it, for me, like, the way that I felt about it was that, like, the high points were really high. And the low points were really low. And something Chris and I have talked about a couple times, but like things like the Marvel films, I kind of not that into, because I feel like they're very safe with those films. And only be as good as like a 7 out of 10 and never really get any worse than like a 4 out of 10. Right.
That's
well,
fair.
There are moments that are like 10 out of 10 good in The Last Jedi. And there are moments that are, you know, 2, 3.
Well,
good, right?
Good friend of the show and part of the show, really, Criterion Cast, Scott Nye, who is a massive slow cinema fan and art film, he loved it. And he was talking about how great the visuals were. And I think he said it was, if not the best, one of the best. This is coming from a guy that we had an episode about, Jacques Rivette. You know, you want to talk about slow cinema? It's slow cinema for 8 hours. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think it's good. Yeah. And like you said, I think people who really appreciate film and look into like the meaning of the images and look beyond just like, I love Luke Skywalker,
right,
and like general Star Wars fandom. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but like, if you appreciate those things, there's a lot to love in it.
Well, I'm going to try to see it this coming week. I avoided the crowds.
Sure.
It's not like next week is going to make much of a difference, but
still the same movie.
Still the same movie, but the crowds too, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe
the crowds kind of help with Star Wars sometimes. It's one of the few films that I've seen that like people applaud and break into applause at the like production logo. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's a bit contagious.
The only thing I went to not Casino Royale, but one of the Bond films with a crowd, and there was somebody next to me that was like dancing and like dancing to like the opening, like out of his chair, and I just worry I'll get one of those guys. I'll just ruin the experience. So anyway, Star Wars. I think a lot of people are watching it right now. But Justin, do you have a piece of flair?
Yeah. This last week, I watched the documentary that just came out on Netflix, Jim and Andy, about him playing Andy Kaufman, about Jim Carrey playing Andy Kaufman in Man on the Moon. And also to like gear up for watching the documentary, I rewatched Man on the Moon because I haven't seen that. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen it since high school, which I guess I watched when it came out because I was really into Jim Carrey. And obviously it's a very different Jim Carrey movie than I was used to. So I watched it again to kind of prep for the documentary, and I ended up watching both of them. It's a great movie, Man on the Moon. I really like it.
Me
and,
too.
And going into the documentary, there's a lot of Jim Carrey, like just right there in the camera interviewing him. And like, you can just watch his eyes without even like listening to what he's saying sometimes. And just like, there's so much emotion and thought behind his eyes that it's just fascinating.
I think that movie, it didn't get enough its due when it came out. I think it was really misunderstood, and
much like Andy Kaufman, I think.
Yeah, very much like, and Jim Carrey is pretty. I think we know now he's pretty bonkers, but but I think this role, if I remember, might have kind of wrecked him a little bit, but because I think he went all method. Sounds like.
Yeah, it. This happens in the very beginning of the documentary, but he says that when he was thinking about like doing the role and whether or not he should do it, he tells the story that he was like out on a beach and he just had this voice in his head that was Andy Kaufman. Like he says, like more or less like coming down spiritually and saying like, "Hey, don't worry about it. Just take the role. I'll take over for you and I'll do it right." And basically saying that like Andy Kaufman spiritually took him over to do the role.
Andy Kaufman incepted him.
Yes. In the role.
Well, I did not know that documentary was on Netflix, so I appreciate you telling me that. I'm going to add it to my queue, and I think, I want to see that because I dig the Man on the Moon. Well, mine is, I don't know, maybe the front runner for the Oscar this year. This year's, it's hard to tell. Do you guys get into like Oscar films and buzz and all that stuff?
Most years. I've slacked the last couple of years, but most years.
This is my favorite time of year. This is when all the good movies come out.
Usually, yeah, and Star Wars too.
Yeah,
including Star Wars in that equation. But well, so we finally went and saw Lady Bird, and since no Star Wars, wife and I did a movie night or movie day afternoon, and this it's pretty good. Have you guys seen it yet?
It's on the list.
Yeah, it's on the list. It came down to this or Three Billboards, and I chose Three Billboards, and I feel like I might have made the wrong choice.
You know, that I actually had the same choice because they were both playing at the same theater. So, it's pretty good. It's only an hour and a half, and it's, I'm going to mess up her name. I think it's Saoirse Ronan. Is that right?
Your guess is as good as mine. And that sounded really good to me, I think.
Could have been me just slurring my words because I drank too much, but, but she's so likable. I mean, she really just, is the great cast for this lead, for this character. Not a very imperfect character, but very, a lot of charismatic character. Really an enjoyable protagonist. And I had a couple problems with the film. Some of the peripheral characters were flat. Actually, I think it went too fast sometimes. I think they didn't really give much room to breathe. But yeah, it was very good. And it's not my choice. I think so far I would pick Florida Project and Columbus as my favorites of the year. But this is definitely top 10, I think. So and I have not seen Three Billboards yet. Would you recommend it?
I would recommend watching it now because like the most interesting thing that it has going for it to me is the commentary on like the political landscape, and without getting into too much, but like kneeling during the NFL anthem and, okay. and protest against police. And like in this current environment is where the film's really interesting. I feel like if somehow that's all resolved in the future,
in 90 days when it comes out of the, I gotta hope so.
I guess now, not necessarily. You don't necessarily have to go see it in theaters. I'm sure it'll still be relevant enough when it comes out. But I guess I'm thinking like 10 years from now, it may not feel as relevant.
I got it. you never know. Kind of like Ace in the Hole. It might stay relevant. I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but I hope not. So anyway, well, that's the show. So so where can people find your stuff? I don't know if you want to talk about personal accounts or the podcast. You pick.
Yeah. I don't think there's really any need to talk about our personal stuff. I'm mostly just active on Facebook. I'm actually really bad at social media on like a personal level, doing like Twitter or Instagram. But you can follow our podcast on all of those. We're a little bit better about posting for the podcast. But you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Casual Criterion. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/casuallycriterionpodcast. And if you just want to email us straight up, you can email us at casuallycriterion@gmail.com.
Cool. And I do recommend the show. I'm enjoying it so far, and I'm enjoying the new direction with the deeper dives. I think one thing with doing it by spy number, it's really tough to rewatch movies and keep current, and especially when you get to like, you're going to get to Sallow soon.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah,
and Chris is dreading that one. I've seen it. I've seen it once all the way, and all the really hard to watch parts I've seen three or four other times because I make people watch it.
You're an awesome friend. I actually think it's a masterpiece. I think it's shocking, but I really look forward to your take. Try to get past the shock and look at the politics. I think, again, that's one that stays relevant. So yeah, check out their show. I'm enjoying it so far, and I like their page. I'll put notes in the all the links in the show notes. So you can find our show at Criterion Cast. You can find us on the Criterion Cast Master Feed, Facebook group Criterion Now. I'm on Twitter, AWS505, and I'm now on Instagram, AWS505 as well. So thanks, Chris and Justin, for joining us. This has been a blast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This has been awesome.
Very fun.